This episode of Film Sack is brought to you by the continuing generosity of listeners just like you. If you want to be one of them, head on over to patreon.com/frogpants today.
The object Ankh has been identified with the code word sanctuary. The object and the word both relate to runners who have not been accounted for.
Question.
Hold. Unaccounted runners 1056. You may state your question.
1,056 unaccounted for?
The number is correct.
No sad man ever ran.
This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
Welcome, one and all, to another episode of Film Sack. This is Film Sack, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind, episode 411. It's the 411. I'm Scott Johnson, joined today by Brian Renew Dunaway.
I'm going to renew my Blockbuster membership. Oh, hi. Yes, this is Dr. Face Laser. Why, yes, they are. The one called Logan 5 is on the table as we speak. In fact, he's in the process of sexually harassing Nurse Farrah 3. Yeah, those Sandman are all about getting naked. He's all like, hey, is that soup? I better get naked so I don't get any on my clothes. Hey, you should get naked too, and then we can eat soup with careless abandon. Oh no, hot soup on my genitals. Anywho. Yeah, I can zap his face. Twould be my pleasure. But listen, I gotta go. I need to wrap this whole thing up before Carousel tonight. What? You've never been to Carousel? Dude, it's like a human bug zapper. Hey, human, you renewed. There's no such thing. I'm a doctor, damn it. Question. What's my name? No, my fancy doctor name. That's right. Dr. Snooty Patooty Kitty Duty. Meow. Yeah, I'm naked right now. Gotta go.
Why aren't you writing like a weekly column? Like, for real. Like, I don't know. Yeah. Your brain, the places it goes, it's just insane to me.
So often it reminds me of Mike Myers in the Axe Murderer movie. No. Like, I'm just like, I want Brian to have this, like, slam poetry outlet.
Yeah, I agree, dude. You need to. We need to think. We need to talk. Someone needs to animate the shit you say. That's what they need to
that
do.
Would be fun. Oh my God, I would enjoy that.
Can you imagine that YouTube channel? Good Lord. All right. Also with us, Randy, enter Sandman Jordan.
Aloha, Scott, Brian,
Randy.
Okay. This is called Reptile in the Bucket. I wrote it myself just now in about 5 minutes of effort. Every lizard has four legs. Five, if you count the tail. Born from a clutch of lizard eggs, all over covered in scale. But one brave lizard is revered with great awe, for he went beyond dreams and dared to crawl right up the naked lady's hoo-haw and spent the rest of the movie there.
Yeah,
thanks, T.S. Eliot.
You never did get to see the lizard leave.
No. Yeah. It really is a.
I am so glad you brought that up. Oh my gosh, that's funny. There's your chick in the bucket.
I loved it. Yeah, dude.
It's your chick in the bucket for sure.
That was so good.
All right. Sorry. We're finally with us.
I was expecting her to jump up and go, huh? Oh my. Oh, never mind. It's
on fine now. I call him Jeffrey. Anyway.
Also, he lives finally, in my vagina now.
Oh, yeah, his vagina house. Also with us, and finally, Brian, Electro Dildo Poker Sticks, Ibbot.
Right, yes. This is true. So, you young people are going to take me back to the city with you so I can see even more young people? Well, what are we waiting for? Let's go. You know, this walk reminds me of the time I was 8 and my parents sent me to walk to the store to buy a loaf of bread. Oh, You've never heard of bread? Looks like you've never heard of bras either. What? Oh, nothing. Just talking to myself. Say, I found some more wrinkles. Want to touch them? No? Okay, maybe later. So you're telling me that to get to Washington, D.C., you traveled from your city through the underground sewer tunnels, then up the never-ending elevator, and then through the ice layer, then down the mountain, and then through the fields? And then to get back, you just have to swim down and move a couple grates? Are you sure this isn't a Spielberg movie?
Right. Love it.
I mean, I'm not going to... I don't want to overstep my bounds here, and maybe it's just all in my own head, but I think these three are some of the best intros I've ever heard on the show.
The source material was amazing.
Yeah, there's so much to choose from.
Well, look, we're talking about Logan's Run here today, and I said before the show, and I'll repeat it here for the listeners, it feels like the movie we were meant to cover. It feels like one that should have been here on day one.
Yeah.
And it has been on a list forever. It just keeps fluctuating in and out of availability, and we never wanted it to be sort of, you know, unavailable for people to see. So the minute it hit Netflix, it was like, oh, okay. We have our target. Go, tango down, right? We had to go. And I'm so glad that we did, because I haven't seen it since it was maybe shown on TV. I think that's probably true for a lot of us. Mm-hmm. And I remember it so vaguely. Like, in fact, there's a line, I may as well just get this out so I can remember to say it, but there's a line that I always remember somebody saying, "It is good to run." And I don't remember, and no one says that in that movie.
No, so it's like, really play it again, Sam. It's like,
I think
that,
you're,
like,
yeah, it are you is. Thinking, did they say that in Running Man, possibly?
No, I don't think so. Like, I was trying to think of all the other running movies, like even The Island, which we've covered here, which is a sort of pared down ripoff of this.
And that definitely feels like that would be as good to run.
And somebody in like a chair, and he's old, says, "Running, it is good to run." And it's not in this movie. It's not there.
No, no.
So I'm a little annoyed with myself, because I have a false memory of a thing that was not in the film at all. But
no, but boy, did I go through some PTSD from old television days when it was like, "There is no sanctuary."
That stuff is creepy, man. Oh my
God. That slow-mo Max Headroom thing was kind of cool. I dug it.
Well, I mean, it was cool, but as a kid, it would have freaked me completely out.
When I was a kid, this movie freaked me out from top to bottom. It's the reason why I loved it so much, because the idea that you would willingly walk into your own death, it was such a scary, the whole thing's just a scary thought for a young mind.
So, yeah.
Can we, first, let's talk about it was rated PG.
Yeah.
This movie was rated PG.
How?
I think it was as close as you can get to leaving PG in 1976. Like, I feel like they very finely tuned it for that rating. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, we're working with the rating board to get this dumb rating. Like, I started watching it with my 9-year-old, and after a few minutes, you know, pretty early on, they start exploding people in the air.
Yes, like, right.
Okay, I guess 9-year-old's going to bed now.
Yeah. and that was bad enough, but then I don't know, it got weird in lots of ways, not to mention the freaking orgy scene and all the naked ladies. Like, I don't remember that from the TV version.
Oh, no, that was not a TV show. This is
definitely not.
The amount of boobies that showed up in this blew me away, because I was not... I didn't remember any of that, because I saw two versions of it.
It is a situation where they go through the orgy room, and there's really no reason to show that on TV, because it doesn't add anything to the plot. It's just it's just mud on the ground that you have to slog through as you're chasing somebody else. And you can cut to the beginning of the mud, and then cut out the mud, and then cut to where they're just getting out of the mud and be just fine.
We see this. It's almost a trope, because we see this in lots of movies, is that chase through scene, you know, in bedrooms where people are doing the thing. Yes, well, would there be bedrooms here? So they kind of, they altered it a little bit. No, they altered it a lot.
There aren't. Nope.
Right.
Oh my
gosh. Is that the arcade? What is it?
Oh my gosh. Everything about that place. So when they were, I mean, it was eerily comparable to a mall I grew up with called the, I forgot the name of the mall, but it was a downtown mall. It's now gone. They tore it out and put in a brand new kind of outdoor thing with a roof that comes over it during the winter. It's super nice and fancy and way too expensive down there now. But it used to be this cool mall, and it's the same. I swear it's that mall. Yeah. In fact, I looked and looked and looked. I'm like, did they film this there? Did they film it there? And I couldn't find anything, but all the escalator stuff, all the multiple floor stuff, when they're walking around joking and talking early in the film as sandmen, I'm like, well, that over there, they just covered up a Victoria's Secret in that side of, well, or what it would have been in 76. I don't know what it would have been.
So that was a mall in Dallas, Texas called the Dallas Market Center.
Right. It was
totally underground, right? Like a totally underground mall?
Or it at the very least, totally enclosed. Like there were not windows or something. Yeah. It just felt, I don't know. It didn't feel good. It didn't feel like they were trying very hard to make something timeless, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, well, whatever. I mean, at the time, I guess as a kid, again, none of that. You're so impressed by the other visuals, or as Brian Ibbett kept saying all week, the fact that they're all living on Risa, basically. Everybody's dressed like that terrible Star Trek episode.
Yeah.
But, with, you know, when you're younger and that stuff is jumping out at you and the colors and this kind of psychedelic approach to the material, it's fine. But when you're older and it's 2019, you're looking back on this, whew, man, it's just like you could tell when it transitioned from that's a mall to that's a convention center entry space to that's a hotel check-in lobby. Space. Like, yeah lobby yeah. thing. Like, just really obvious stuff like that. But when I was younger, I had no idea. It all looked like a weird dystopia.
It's future. Yeah.
It's the Epcot future, really. I mean, if you go if you go to Epcot, it feels at least in 1989 or whenever Epcot, right. 1985 when Epcot opened, it felt like, oh, this is Logan's Run. Like, all we need are the enclosed tubes with the little cars going through.
Oh, okay. And I'm so glad you brought that up, because I just want to put it out there early and now that is my favorite thing about the movie. I love intricate miniatures in old movies, even when they're cheesy. It's so obvious it's miniatures, but it didn't matter. They were these complex tubes. And but I thought of you again, because we always talk about Micronauts and how cool those tube Micronaut things
were.
Yes,
I had those. I had those tubes, yeah.
That made me think of that. It made me want to make one. It looked like Dirty Vegas or something under there. Like,
it did. There were parts. There was the one big the big building with the gold that looked like Mandalay Bay. I had to pull up and see if like there was any connection to the design of Mandalay Bay after the fact, where they said, let's make a hotel that looks like... like Logan's Run.
Isn't that weird? It's so weird to me how all of that.
It was this 70s futurism. Architect from that perspective, you know, interior design, that kind of stuff. Like the doors.
Yeah.
Once they got towards the outside, started going deeper into what quadrant Q or whatever. They had like these big Connect Four looking doors, mm-hmm. and it's like it's just. that was kind of interesting.
There was a show recently we've done. I can't remember what it was, and I think maybe it was Randy that brought it up. But this idea of films that come out and then a year later or less, something just upends it and changes it forever. And this is an example of that. You got Logan's Run in 76, literally the next year, and not even a year apart, Star Wars, and you're done with the Logan's Run motif for sci-fi. You're done. Out. Gone. Yeah, right. No more synthy music. Sorry, Jerry Goldsmith. You're awesome, but no more of that. You're going to go full orchestrated from now on. The way we think of ships and space and action, all of that changes. The technology changes. Like, it's just, we're done. Goodbye. And what a dividing line this was for me visually. Yeah.
This was the apex of sci-fi from, you know, about 67 to about now. So there's a 10-year run where this was the popular form of how we represented sci-fi, and that was about to change.
Yeah.
Just any second.
What's the other one? The Jane Fonda one we saw? What's that one called?
Barbarella.
Barbarella, yeah. That's what this reminded me of.
Barbarella and 2001, all that stuff was in that kind of
era. This 2001 felt like it was weird and ethereal, but it felt unique and of its own. Mm-hmm. Whereas this stuff, this is totally Barbarella material. Buck Rogers on TV was a lot like this. Just their ideas of what tech would be. It's like big neon, stupid flash and everything. And the clothes. Oh my gosh. The brobe he's wearing. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
The clothes. How many, what are you going to wear? Well, I'm going to wear blue.
Green, pink, and blue. Those are my choices, unless I'm a Sandman and then I get black pajamas.
Well, they don't get to choose though, right? Wasn't the deal that
their lot in life, right? Wasn't that kind of...
Well, if you were of a certain age range, you wore the green. If you were a certain whatever. I don't know how the Sandman worked, though. I don't know how they got their jobs.
They're picked at birth. Or I guess not. That one was special because he had been picked at birth.
Yeah.
Right. And it's also lineage, right? Because Logan, it opens up, Logan's in there looking at his child from his seed mama.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess he's supposed to be, you know, primed for Sandman duty. Once he gets a certain age.
I just want to complain because it.
Oh, please.
The movie has this incredible concept, which is that these people are living in a society that's completely controlled by this overmind, but we're not given enough information to care about why that overmind is doing what it's doing, how it's doing what it's doing, what's really affecting people, like, because they're all so like childish and they're living in pure hedonism. There's this missing part that makes it feel like it's not sci-fi. And I don't know, like, they have an opportunity when he sits in front of the computer and talks with the computer that you played at the beginning of the show. Right. They have an opportunity to give me some information, give me something to chew on about how all this works. And that there's a bit of an opportunity in that nursery. And it just doesn't happen. We're just told nothing. Just like, oh, just enjoy the pretties. I'm like, I do enjoy the pretties, but this is sci-fi, and I want more information.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. Yeah. I think I have not read the book, but I've read the synopsis of the book, and I know it's a lot deeper and something I'm interested in reading. Because I think this story will read a lot better than it's presented on screen, especially some of the decisions they made. They've kind of departed somewhat from the book, from the things I read.
So, I'm glad you brought that up, because I came away from this movie wanting a desire to read the books, because I would like to see what's there without them going, all right, how do we make this for a modern audience in 1976? Right. Like, how can this be, you know, what is the source material sort of timeless, the way that the Foundation series is, or Dune or whatever? Like, there's a lot of science fiction that just, it doesn't matter how, when it was made, or the Lord of the Rings or Hobbit or any of that. That stuff was made at a time that was a long time ago, before we knew much about technology, but yet somehow a novel in the 80s, Neuromancer, still seems as relevant in 2019 as it did in 81 or whatever it was. So, like, I want to read these and see if that's what this is. And there's sequels and there's all kinds of stuff.
Remakes and comic books.
Yeah.
My uncle George had the comic book series, the Marvel comic book series, and I remember reading those. And boy, you look at the first, I don't know if you've pulled up the comic book cover for the first issue, but it is, I want to say it's Jim Steranko, great comic book, classic comic book artist, did all the classic Nick Fury poses. But Logan's foot trails off into foreshortening or back shortening and back becomes, so microscopic, like he comes off of his waist and just goes pew.
drawing the Marvel way.
And only lasted like 7 issues or something, and then
it did. They didn't finish. They went basically 5 issues to do the adaptation of the film, and then 2 issues to go beyond, and then it got canceled. So it was just about to get interesting.
The sales pitch on this story is way more interesting than the ability to maintain, because that's the reason why it keeps finding like TV shows that fail, comic books that fail, movie series that really never went anywhere, and remakes that are always being talked about. Like Ryan Gosling was supposed to do part of the remake, which I'm glad he really didn't. I was super glad to see him in Blade Runner 2049. I thought that was
well. Oh, that if was it awesome. Became a choice between those two things, definitely Blade Runner was the better way to go.
Yeah, but if Denis Villeneuve or whatever the hell his name is, the one's working on Dune now and did Blade Runner and before that Arrival and Sicario, that director, if it came out tomorrow that his next film was Logan's Run, I would take a shit.
Or
Danny Boyle or
Oh, Danny Boyle's a good call, Randy. That's an awesome pick.
That'd be a good one too.
And the thing is, like my complaints all have to do with where they refused to take license. So they added this concept of carousel to the film. The books don't have that, and they added it because they needed to sort of like give you some more beautiful, incredible things to see. And like the process of making the film was making carousel. Really, like they talk about in the documentary how it's so much effort went into this one scene in this Colosseum, and like they added it, they made it up. Yeah. It wasn't in the original source material. I'm like, if you're willing to do that, why not give Box a better name?
Yeah.
I liked Box.
Well,
I think Box did.
We all like Box, but it's not.
Box would be, he would be such a much more, it would just be so much better in written form actually Because, I mean, I don't need to see dryer vents on a guy's arms.
He's basically silver Mrs. Butterworth.
Yeah, he really was. He's no mobility. He's not scary at all. Just freaking get behind him and grab his shit.
Oh, he's super. I disagree. He's super scary just because of his maniacal laugh and the protein from the scene. I'm like, whoa, dude, back up. You just froze a bunch of runners naked, by the way. What was the point of that?
Also, well, I don't,
because as you know, as soon as anybody enters that cave, the first thing they do is, oh, let's take off our clothes to get warm.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, man, he was that.
That's why everyone was frozen in that tunnel.
Michael York was, like, constantly trying to get naked in this movie. It's like, hey, we should get or take our clothes off. We don't want to freeze to us. Take them off, baby. Yeah,
they were always taking them off. She's awesome, by the way. Went on to have a big, long, still working career.
Jenny Gutter, I think.
Yeah, she played Jessica Six. And she's in... tons of stuff, but I, in particular, in Avengers 1, well, she was in British Avengers, okay? So she was in that. Okay. But then, in 2012, she's in the Marvel Avengers.
MCU Avengers, yeah.
As head of one of the government people thing deal. Secret Society, government lady, whatever it is. But she's just got a very interesting face, a long-working British actress. But, man, if they didn't put her in the skimpiest of stupid clothes, I don't know who did.
Especially at the beginning where when he's on chat roulette.
That was so fun. She was... Right, go ahead.
He accessed Dial-A Girl.
Yeah.
Right. Well, Dial-A anybody.
Yeah. But also do it like you do your car when you're out in the middle of Kansas trying to pick up a station.
I did not... That freaked me out so much because at first I thought, oh... It's a TV screen he's looking in. And then she steps out and I'm like, holy crap. They're just like hanging around in some kind of giant, you know, roulette.
It's Tinder. Like it is live Tinder. Like swipe left. Physical. You know what? Okay, you're good. Yeah, come on out.
Yeah.
But she's basically wearing a scarf with a belt around it.
Yeah.
And the way that he's just tuning it, like, wee. I'm like, really? Oh, right. Is it because in 76 we just thought that's how everything was going to be?
The sound of the shortwave tuner is the only futuristic sound we could think of.
My watching buddy last night in the movie actually left the room after about 10 minutes of Goldsmith's annoying synthesizer difference, just aggressive sounds that were just totally annoying. But was to effect, because that's what you're supposed to feel. You're supposed to feel uncomfortable.
Yeah, no,
I mean, it is the same sci-fi soundtrack that everything at the time was using.
Yeah,
Zardoz.
There's the other one. I'm glad you brought that up. Zardoz is firmly in this category. Yes, Randy.
Yes, for sure.
But I'll bet you if you take the score from the new Blade Runner 20 something. I can't even remember the
2049.
Thank you. I'll bet you if you take the score from it and just completely replace it into Logan's Run, I'll bet you it sounds real good.
I agree. A lot of people didn't care for what they did bringing back and reinterpreting from the original Blade Runner, those all the sounds and stuff. They didn't appreciate it. I liked it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
By the way, did anybody, I'm just jumping around here, did anybody feel like they started to do an animated laser gun thing and just decided, we'll just go with your imagination for how the gun worked?
Yeah. Well, it's funny, for a sci-fi movie, zero lasers, zero spaceships.
right.
You know, all the things that we think of are synonymous with sci-fi movies. Right. None of it was here.
No.
The guns were like... I had read some stuff about it and they said that they didn't work most of the time. Michael York was complaining about that. So he got naked. But they only worked half the time.
Well, you mean like to protest? Because, he got naked to protest. Is that
yes? Right. No, he was just got naked cause it was 2 o'clock.
Got it.
But he, if you watch him when he's shooting lots of times, he like just shakes it around. Like he just like shakes it. Like it's not going to, I think it almost looks like it's something that's broke. And he's trying to make it work.
Mm-hmm. No, he's kind of like flinging it. Like he's flinging it. The bullets at people.
Yeah. Did you guys see the GIF I made of him like trying to?
Yeah,
oh,
I did.
It
I
makes me
it
laugh eternally. I don't know what it is. Something about him snapping it forward and making a face like there's some goo on it. Like he has to get a booger off of it.
You can really almost hear him going pew 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 as he's doing it.
How did y'all feel about Michael York and his performance? He has such a deep throaty voice, and it just
I don't know.
I think he had the right amount of detachment initially, because you have to be this kind of detached dick to be a Sandman at the beginning.
Detached dick.
Detachable dick. So that's a dildo.
Yeah.
Right.
Got it. Nailed it.
And then, you know, seeming like he kind of cares through the second half, but he comes across at the very end like a crazy person. You don't have to die.
Which the worst delivery. I actually liked it a lot.
Did you?
I actually liked that more than I thought I would. The angry acting in this film, Richard Jordan, who plays Francis Seven, he is, oh my goodness, to me,
he's great.
He stole the show. He stole the show. He was just fantastic.
Yeah. At first I thought, oh, young Anthony Hopkins maybe. And then I looked it up as like, oh no, you know where we've seen this guy is he's the big boss man in the secret of my success with Michael J. Fox.
Yeah.
I also compared him looks wise to Carl Sagan.
A little bit. Yeah.
I think it's just the haircut. The haircut made all men at that time look the same.
They all look sort of like right. But he died too early. Died at like 56.
From a brain tumor.
Yeah, that sucks. Yeah. F that.
Whereas, did you notice the director lived to be 98?
Yeah.
Are you cool? Okay, it's cool. I thought you were like saying, you know, that's unjust.
But, no, I think it's awesome.
Did he just sit around with a bunch of cats in a vine-filled room?
Yeah, no kidding. Oh my gosh. You're reminding me of that Lincoln overgrowth, which just is still.
Yeah.
There's the thing with that image. It's number one, that's a bad government shutdown. Number two, there's something about Lincoln's eyes in that shot where he is just looking at you with his eyes. It's very brief, but it's freaky. And I remember as a kid being kind of weirded out.
I was trying to remember, and I wish they would have done it, and I'm kind of bummed that they didn't. But when they first show up and they see Lincoln on the memorial, like, oh, this must be one of the people who lived here. Man, they were huge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. They used to be giants. Mm-hmm. Weird.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. But
you know, all that was, I remember seeing that back in the day, and I saw Planet of the Apes first. So I was, when I saw this, even back then I was going, they're wanting to be Planet of the Apes. You're stealing all these monuments. Oh, no, I'm so surprised. Ooh, everything's overgrown as monuments. And, you know, my little smart attitude. But the whole, I don't know. I was hoping they were going to find a bunch of people there. Because I remember from the TV show, I thought he found a bunch of people. But apparently, I was confusing this with something else.
Yeah. I might have, too. But that's my point. It feels like it's the epitome of that era. And it's kind of mashed together in a way that I forgot that a lot of this stuff was attributable to Logan's Run. And then a lot of it I've been applying to other movies or thought they were other movies. Like the scene where they're swimming naked in the wherever it is, the lake or waterfall.
And is it the waterfall or are they swimming in front of the reflecting pool. Yeah. That's what I was thinking. Is it a reflecting pool?
The trivia says it's in that famous, there's some famous backlot pool that was built for some old Hollywood stuff.
Oh, I'm sure they couldn't have swum in the real reflecting pool. I was just saying, were they implying that's where it was?
They may have been, but my point is that scene I have in a whole nother movie and I don't know. I couldn't even tell you what one, but I thought that happened somewhere else.
You're thinking like of Dragonheart.
Probably Dragonheart. Yes.
Or it was kind of like Blue Lagoon and some other things.
A little bit. But I remember, so as a kid, I remember the name being bandied about by adults. Peter Ustinov. You'd hear that name and go,
sure.
He's some actor I don't care about. But at the time, it was a big deal for my parents for some reason. He was like, you know, some awesome character actor that would blow people's minds. Plus, he directed and wrote and did all this. And I never followed any of that. I think he was great in this. Like, legit good. The material, whatever you can say about it. But his delivery, his moments of improvisation, which you could clearly tell some of that was improv, I thought he was awesome. I'm a little bummed that he's only like 53. And
we're
all really close to that. So I don't know why he looked so old. Maybe a lot of that was makeup. But the point is, I thought he rocked it. He kind of channeled the dude a little bit. A little bit of the dude.
A little bit, yeah. You know? I didn't even think about that.
But now, I don't know. It's kind of a weird feeling to appreciate this name of somebody who, he was my parents' guy, you know?
Yeah.
And I never cared about it. So to me, I'm thinking, well, who do I have now that I would one day want to hear somebody say, like, I don't know, who plays.
I think Mark Hamill is turned into that guy. He is just so, I just love him so much. And anytime he shows up in anything, I just am like,
Star Wars.
It feels good.
Yeah. When he's in Star Wars, that's great. I can't think of anything else he's in. Is he in other stuff?
That's the thing. Mark Hamill is in that, what do we call it? Daniel Radcliffe category where you're stuck. Sorry. Yeah. Rest of your life.
You can't play the affected teenager for this other movie, but you're going to be Harry Potter for us forever.
Yeah. Whereas
but we know you're really secretly in disguise, Harry Potter. Yeah. We know what you're up to.
I feel bad for him because his co-star, what's her name? Can't think of her name.
Emma Watson.
Doing fine. Got lots of roles, different stuff, diversity going on, lots of stuff. She's not stuck as Hermione for eternity. But him and Ron, sorry, fellas, you're done. Yeah. You're Harry and Ron until the end of time, and it doesn't matter edgy freaking Lars von Trier nude scene you do. It's not going to change it.
He's done a lot of independent films that are kind of odd.
Yeah.
Trying to break out.
Daniel Radcliffe. Yeah. You know who could have so easily, and it's amazing he didn't fall into this, was Harrison Ford.
Oh, I agree.
Could have so easily been just Han Solo typecast forever, but he did so many.
Because he didn't make the character that special. It was a very generic performance.
I mean, it was like special to us, but you're right. The performance itself.
Yeah, it was perfectly well written and everything. Like it was a fine character. He was well directed as Han Solo, but it wasn't like this defining thing. It was you could see Han Solo being Indiana Jones or vice versa. Like you could, you know what I mean? Like he didn't have to go very far. When this movie started, getting back to Logan's Run, as soon as I saw it's Michael York, right?
Yeah.
As soon as I saw Michael York, all I could think about was him in the Austin Powers movie. All I had.
Yeah. I forgot he was in that. Yeah. Right. Yeah. No, he's a very, you can't look at him and not, you know, you either go there or you go Logan's Run or you don't go anywhere else. There's nowhere else to go. So I for one, like, this is the weird thing about this movie. I start this thing up with very low expectations. I'm just thinking, well, this is going to be one of our goofy film sacks where it just rip on it and it doesn't hold up and all this stuff. But the actual themes of the story and the predicaments the characters are in, despite all the caked on ridiculous 1976 tropes, kind of really weirdly worked for me. Like the realization that these carousel people are not being regenerated, or that's just a myth that they've been fed, which is, you know, allegorical to all the myths we teach each other to feel better about ourselves and or to, you know, hold power over others. Like that allegory really sticks out to me. I don't know if it's just the time we live in or whatever, but it worked. Like it made me go, ugh, I hate that. I freaking hate it. Like all these people duped completely into this. And even when they come back and scream from the top of the mall stairs over there, the people will turn, listen, and then go the other way. And I'm thinking that is just heart wrenching. Despite the cheesy dialogue and the horrible delivery and all of that, the actual themes of Logan's Run were really working for me in this.
Yeah, I agree. And the thing that really kind of surprised me at the very end, whenever all the young folks were gathering around, and the old man dude, they're going to push off. They're going to accidentally push off the thing, by the way. I'm like, don't, be careful. There's water behind you. He's going to fall and break his hip.
There's not enough room on here for everybody.
No, stop it. But then I was thinking, oh, this is cool. You know, they get to meet the old man. But then I'm like, what are these hedonistic fools going to do? Because there's not enough food out there for these fools. Mm-hmm. And you know, they were being taken care of. And, you know, wow, you want to talk about some crap happening. It was about to hit the fan now. I felt bad for everybody.
Well, I assume if the leadership was just the computers, I don't know.
Right. Who was taking the computer? The one computer was taking care of everything for them. And now that's gone.
But in theory, they go and now they've got a perfectly salvageable food supply. Like, you know, there's ways to deal with it. They did imply that all the fish and wildlife have died, which is,
that's what I was curious about, because with Box had, you know, fish swimming around, giant fish from the sea. But then there were, I think that was actually a mistake, because I think a lot of the old man's dialogue was improv.
It says in the trivia it was, anyway.
Right. And so I think when he said that, you know, he used to fish here and now a lot of the fish were dead, I think that was his interpretation of what had happened. But I think life was actually thriving, according to what Box was
implying. Maybe it just wasn't thriving there. Maybe it was.
Yeah, that's what that's what I got from the lizard. Like the lizard right, has to stand in for a universe of creatures that are thriving out on the outside.
Right.
And you know, Box's job, he's just programmed to bring food from the outside to the inside, mm-hmm. without anybody on the inside knowing that he exists or what he's doing.
Right.
And so, like, you're supposed to just be blown away that he's feeding people back to the people, but it's actually not really stated. So you don't really get, you just see them in the ice, like, you know. But like, I think his
Soylent Green is Soylent people. Green.
Yeah, I was gonna say it's very Soylent Green.
Soylent Green is people. Yeah.
No, you're not wrong. Like,
he says, he says pretty clearly that he's getting his fish from the ocean. So
right.
They're protein.
That's how old man is also doing some fishing or something.
That was the other question.
Just overfished the lake.
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking.
Is the old man just eating cat turds? Like, what is he living on? The guy's got, he's a fat guy.
Well, walnuts, clearly.
Oh, yeah. Walnuts. I forgot about the walnuts.
Yeah.
No, all that stuff was left weirdly unsaid. But as cheesy as some of the map painting and the kind of overlay stuff was in the DC destruction, that stuff looked kind of cool. Like, there's a shot of
the
capital
of it than the actual visual of it.
And
the money.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, the money they spent on the sets is just outrageous. It was most of the budget, right? From what I was understanding, and it makes sense because this is a traveling film. This is a journey film, and they're journeying from one location to the other, and there is a lot of places to see and a lot of places to set up.
Yeah,
and it's not like some like Planet of the Apes where they just go, okay, we're traveling, but 90% of us just wasteland.
Yep.
This is actual places.
Yeah.
Very expensive sets.
They apparently saved like $3 million by filming in that Dallas mall as opposed to actually doing sets. It's like, oh, we get this mall. Looks futury. Okay, let's do it.
How do you get a whole mall to empty out and say, do you just go in on like a Sunday? Because back in the day, they weren't open on Sundays. Or did you?
In the middle of the night.
Probably late night. Yeah.
Exactly. You know, you plan to film on a holiday. And so you're going to get like 48 hours straight overnight and so on.
I could see that. And they really didn't have, that much that was in there. It was enough to, enough B-roll to make it work. But there's a trope you just mentioned that we just kind of glossed over. The idea that your post-apocalyptic sci-fi film or whatever, the big reveal is that it's our world. And it's, here's old Lincoln on it, it's all to crap. It's that Planet of the Apes moment of damn you all to hell with a big freaking, Statue of Liberty. Like this movie loved rubbing that in my face. They were way into it.
And it's funny because I guess I saw it when I was so young that never even dawned on me that it was supposed to be a surprise ending that, oh my gosh, when you see the Washington Monument off there in the distance, like, wait a minute. It's Earth. I'd never even thought for one moment that it wasn't.
I think it actually says at the beginning that you're on Earth.
It may have, but the part they didn't tell you was that what they don't make clear is that so much time has passed and that all of the previous civilization is just ruin. And so the idea is that you go out there, and first of all, Sanctuary doesn't exist. It's just an idea.
Right.
But then, so that's supposed to be shocking. But then it's like, oh, Lincoln, who's this man? I saw his face over on the statue guy. And, it's just all very like, ooh, discovering all this old stuff that we see now and take for granted because it's all functioning, barely. But you know what I mean? Like, it's like that kind of idea that somehow the great empires have fallen. And then you're like, oh, here's an old remnant of it. Ooh, and the music rises and you get all freaked out about it. It's very tropey to me. You see that in lots of things, and I don't mind it. I get why it's effective, but Brian's right. I mean, and Randy's right. They said Earth, so I shouldn't have been
Earth.
It shouldn't have been as obvious as it was. But sure,
I mean, the surprise was that it still existed. That it wasn't torn down and built over top of, because that's what you would expect. It was abandoned, and that's what.
Yeah, it wasn't bombed out or anything either. Like there's no destruction. It was all there, just overrun with vines and stuff. And I would be very curious. So that's what I wonder about the books. Do the books get into any of that? Cause that's fascinating to me. I'd like to know the process of the downturn. What happened? Why did it all crap out? Was it a massive virus? Was it earthquakes? Was it war?
Scott, me and you are going to read the book. Let's do it.
I'm going to do it. I think I am going to read it. I think I am.
And how was it so fragile also? That's another thing. Like, I don't like the trope of the load-bearing boss where you break a computer and then the whole city comes crashing exploding. Down. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Is that really called the trope of the load-bearing boss? That's amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that.
That's, and that's in some things.
That's great. That's that's like the Tron has that trope.
Yeah. You guys have no idea how hard I'm working every day for this place not to explode.
Yeah.
Because this place wants to explode
the one
so bad.
Keeping you from explosion.
Yeah, I mean, and sometimes you don't even really notice it. Like when Sauron dies in Return of the King, and then the whole land starts collapsing. Mm-hmm. You're just like, you know, you're just going with it because he feels like more than just a guy. You know, but like in this case, it was a computer. It was just a computer.
Yeah, a shit
killing
computer.
Killing a computer should not cause a city to collapse.
A computer that was still in 1976, because they probably thought this would never change, but it was like, you could hear it going, like it was it was writing the like punch cards or something was getting pooped out.
Exactly.
Yeah, I like that trope.
I don't think we used the trope of sending a computer in, you know, into some kind of illogical logic circle that it can't rectify. Therefore it explodes. I don't know. I didn't, that part felt really weak to me. Cause I'm like, why can't it accept the fact that there is no sanctuary? Why does the computer need there to be a sanctuary? Cause that's what really kind of blows his mind. It's like, well, where do the people go? They have to be a sanctuary. If they're not there, then where are they at?
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. And, like,
you would think you could just tell the computer, well, Box got him. Like, okay.
Right. And he did, and the computer's like, no, not buying it. I'm not buying it. You're lying to me.
Yeah, it was, there's so many places I want to go with this movie. I guess I came away with it just surprised how much I enjoyed it in a non-ironic way. Like, I'm not saying it, you know, I was completely enraptured by its imagination or anything, but
well, or its visuals. I mean, it's, you know, it's of the budget of the 1974 or 1976 or whatever it was, and it's still a very, it's not even like a message. It's like, oh yes, that's true today.
Yeah. It's got a very entertaining pace. You know, I never felt like we were sitting around too long.
If you reach around and like really grope in this movie's symbolism,
you'll find a list.
You can find some
too much.
Yeah, you can find some themes that are like, okay, they're applicable, but they're so basic, right? Like a crowd of people who are taught to believe something will do anything and accept any kind of travesty or this kind of like these real like so basic that I'm not even really entertained by it. Yeah. At the same time, this movie has real serious Cirque du Soleil, and that's super entertaining. And like I gotta keep coming back around to this contraption that they built.
Yeah, it was crazy.
The carousel.
Oh, the carousel. Yeah. Which, by the way, anyone else bothered by the fact they spelled carousel with two R's in
the
So apparently they were afraid of the stage show Carousel, like the famous musical that was on Broadway at the time.
Oh, that's hilarious.
That's why they didn't. There's trivia about how they didn't use a Nixon painting because there was a joke
right
like
by that time.
Tricky Dick something on it. And they were like, it's too close, too soon. We can't, you know, we'll get in trouble or whatever. But yeah, I could tell.
Let the cats use this one as their litter box.
Yeah, they can shit on it. But the flying stunts were crazy. Like at the time, nobody did anything quite like this. It was like this circular rig. It says here that it was designed to rotate in sync with the revolving floor plate. Initially, the performers were all supported by a single winch driving the mechanism for their thin support cables. The cables became tangled during rehearsals, so they had to kind of figure that out.
Yeah, that sounds crazy.
They had a winch on it that was basically a panic switch. So if something was going wrong and somebody was getting tangled up, you'd hit that and the entire power of the thing would stop and they'd start over and like really went all in on the carousel.
Then everyone swings back and forth on their cords and whacks into each other like those desk toys with the marbles and
the
silver marbles.
Unlike, the clacker things. Kind of things.
The decision for 2004 is The Island, which we've seen on the show, the Michael Bay thing, which is obviously heavily influenced by Logan's Run. That's basically Logan's Run. They decide instead to say, well, all these people think they're going to this thing. You don't watch paradise. Each other have a demise. You go to a place and it's a paradise city and freaking all the girls are pretty or whatever. And then
right.
The grass is green and the girls are pretty.
And the girls.
Yeah. Yeah. By the way, the only overweight people are the ones dangling from the strings in in carousel.
Yeah. Yeah, I noticed that. But they you know, the idea that they just go off to some I think I prefer the they think they're going to this place that they've earned to spend the rest of their lives in a paradise, but then are just killed on the other side. There's something about that I like better or is more impactful than this show of like drifting up into a thing and then getting zapped while you're on your way up there. And I don't know. I think all of that work they put into it, great. But that is some 76 ass bullshit going on.
Yeah.
I think I like the idea that they did in the island better. And I thought a lot about the island during this. And it does occur to me that if somebody with the right directorial leadership could make a really cool Logan's Run modern version. There's no reason to not do this, I don't think. There's nothing about this where you're like, don't screw up my childhood. I mean, I'm sure somebody somewhere is that close to the material, but no, for real, like this deserves a modern take.
Ripe for a remake.
Yeah, make this someone. Mm-hmm. I know that rumors of it being remade and then shelved and then remade and shelved and all that, but now's the time.
I think if they do remake it, it'll absolutely go a lot closer to the book, I'm sure. I mean, I don't think we'll see an homage to this particular movie other than if there's like a nod or two.
What if it was? You could see like an HBO series like Westworld kind of done.
Yeah.
With this.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Series would be great. I mean, they tried to do a series. Tom and I watched it for autopilot. It's bad.
Yeah.
but a modern take, Westworld style take, because Westworld's pretty cheesy in the movie stage. You know, we still need to watch that, by the way. We got to get that movie on FilmSack. But what if Logan's Run was just Wolverine on a treadmill for 2 hours? What would that be like?
Sure.
That'd sell like hotcakes, wouldn't it? A notable extra in this film was Ashley Cox. You may know her. I don't know if you will or not, but you may know her as a very popular Playboy model.
Yes, of course.
70s and 80s.
March 1978.
Yeah. Slow down there, buddy.
Yeah.
Love it if that was right.
She's the one poking at his face at the end, but she's also, because they needed more naked people, she was one of the nude people at the love shop scene, making a grab at Logan, so there's that.
Well, we haven't even mentioned Farrah Fawcett being on here, and this is like right before Charlie's Angels, so this may have been this is the first time I ever saw Farrah Fawcett, probably. Mm-hmm.
I think she was just starting to get to where she was being recognized. In fact, there's this great story I found in the trivia. Michael York was playing tennis and saw what he described as a blonde vision of delight.
A blonde vision.
That's an actual quote. And then he says, it turned out to be Farrah Fawcett Majors. York suggested her to the casting director for Logan's Run and subsequently landed the role of Holly.
Holly number two. Okay.
Well done. All right. Well done. I think up to that point, she was only famous for her swimsuit poster. Nipple boob thing.
The swimsuit. Yeah.
Because there was nipples in it. That's
did you did you have that poster? Did anybody have that poster?
My brother did.
I wanted it. My mom wouldn't buy it for me. Although to this day, she insists that I had it.
Oh, but, she thinks you had it?
No, I did not have
That's
that
what moms do now. Is they retrofit our memories.
You loved that Farrah Fawcett poster.
Yeah.
Like, no, I didn't have it. You wouldn't buy it.
Yeah, I loved it. All right. I wanted it.
She's like, you wore that Porky's tape out after a couple of weeks. I'm like, no, mom, you never let me have Porky's. But yeah, like she was, I mean, that was the state of things. My brother, who's 10 years older than me, it was more kind of his era. I mean, I was too young to, I was 6 years old when this movie came out. So I wasn't into Farrah Fawcett yet. But my brother sure was, and he had a big ass one in his room, I remember. And his girlfriend hated it. I remember that.
Hated it.
Yeah. She wasn't.
Get this off the wall. What is this? Yeah.
I wasn't allowed to have such things, so I had like a Michael Jordan poster on the wall. But
that's cool. Why not?
Sure. Is he kin to us, Ma?
That's the joke I used to make. I used to make that when I was younger, when I was like a teenager, I would always tell, I would lead people along that I was related to Michael Jordan.
I love that.
Help them figure that out.
You were the Steve Martin of the early 90s. I love it.
But I remember going to my friend's house. Like I had this one friend whose parents were uninvolved in his, childhood. And by the time he was like 14, 15, he had all those But it wasn't that Cheryl, Farrah Fawcett, you know, sitting with her knee and looking over her left shoulder or right shoulder at the camera. I don't remember that at all. I remember lots of other Cindy Crawford and Rebecca Romijn.
Kathy Ireland, probably. Mm-hmm.
Kathy Ireland, sure, sure, sure. Yeah. But I don't remember this one, you know, at all. So I think it was kind of also of a time, and it got replaced, you know, in the mid-80s or something.
I feel like we've seen movies that are meant to look like they take place in the 80s that have this poster in the background of some kids.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Oh, yeah, it's iconic. Was she married to Lee Majors at the time?
She was.
Yes, she was.
Okay.
At the time, that's a good question. Yeah, it should have been about right time.
Okay. Oh, at the time of the poster.
Yeah. The bionic?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
I don't know.
I can't remember when that show was even on.
It was around 70. Was it 76 when it started? Is that right?
Let's see. 76 to 1980 was Charlie's Angels. Yes.
Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah. She.
What about the $6 Million Man? It was around the same time, right?
I think right around the same time. I'm looking to see when she was married to him, from 73 to 82. So yes, during almost that whole time.
But when was Fall Guy? Because that's my jam.
When wasn't Fall Guy?
Fall Guy was after they divorced.
Yeah, it was like the 80s.
Oh, yeah, 81 to 86. So at the tail end of their marriage was Fall Guy.
God, I love that show. I love that show so much.
Didn't she have some terrible death in a fire or something like that?
No, she died from cancer, didn't she?
She died from cancer, but she died on the same day as Michael Jackson. A few hours before, and so everyone's like, "Oh my God, Farrah Fawcett died! Oh my God, Michael Jackson
and
died!"
There was a
that's
third.
The only thing I ever remember.
There was a third one in 09 too. That same week or that same day,
right?
And
right.
It was another big name, and it was like, "What is going on? These people are just like dying
today."
Going on
with the
yeah,
world?
And the anal cancer was how Farrah Fawcett
nice.
Died.
I thought you were just saying anal cancer, just randomly throwing it out there. I'm just saying anal cancer.
No, she had the movie The Burning Bed, which was like
The Burning Bed.
That was the big
okay.
comeback of film for her, which was going to be her big thing. And then
I conflated that with that's where she died, as she died in a fire in a bed or something. But that's the movie you're talking about, where set her boyfriend on fire or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Right. He was burning an abusive bed. Husband or boyfriend. She burned him in his sleep, and the ensuing trial and court case afterwards.
Yeah, that's intense, man. I don't know why I thought that movie was where she died. Anyway.
I am a fan of when the spouse or like the significant other isn't so obvious. Like Majors and Fawcett, I don't know. That feels really, really obvious to me. Like they were sort of like
Brad Pitt and any
right, amazing. Right. I don't know if you guys have seen Russian Doll yet, but like Natasha Lyonne, you know, from like American
Pie.
Orange
is the New Black. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. She's with Fred Armisen, and I just think that's awesome.
It is awesome. Yeah.
Wait, the two of them are together?
Yes. Yeah. She and Fred Armisen have been a couple
never
for
put
a while.
The two of them together.
No. Exactly.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah. That's what I want. That's,
for some reason in my head, I always picture Fred Armisen dating like a mannequin. I don't know why. Like some,
I think of like
something
for
weird.
Whatever reason, I think, oh yeah, he's with Maya Rudolph, or he's with that Sleater-Kinney chick from Portlandia.
Yeah,
she was.
Weren't they in a series as well? You're right. Maya Rudolph, and
they're in a current thing, a current dark comedy series that's on some streaming network. And
is
I can't remember what it is?
I would say is it Amazon Prime. I think
probably
it might be. Yeah.
Well, I think you're right.
Interesting.
Yeah, she's really good. By the way, as the voice of the, what's it called? The hormone monstress.
Big Mouth.
She is amazing in that. Anyway, yes, Brian.
Let me tell you something. Netflix, when they want you to watch something, they don't let up. And they really want me to watch that Russian Dolls.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah. Well, and every time because it's really good. I'm only really five good. Episodes in. We watched until we couldn't stay awake anymore last night. We're about five episodes in, and we can't wait to see what happens.
Well, it's a Groundhog Day kind of thing, right?
Sort of.
It turns the Groundhog Day thing on its ear, because there have been so many Groundhog Days since Groundhog Day, like the Death Day, and there was an episode of The Flash recently, and the sequel to Happy Death Day just came out this last weekend too. It's, you know, but this one does things in a very different way as far as we are into it. Anyway.
Sure. Did you guys notice Jessica Six kept losing her leggings and then getting them back? don't know if you noticed that.
Yeah, there were green leggings. I noticed that she put them on after she got done swimming. Like, oh, her legs are green now.
Yeah.
And then I guess they were, or at least they're algae covered or something.
We weren't supposed to notice, I think. The hosiery was supposed to be as nude as possible, and we were supposed to just think she was nude the whole time.
Yeah, I think so, too. Right. She's supposed to have bare legs during all of that, but because they're in these cold, cold, damp places.
You should shave those.
No, she was also supposed to have bare feet, but she had on some kind of weird shoe under the leggings.
Yeah. Yeah, I kept thinking that she, at first I thought she had, I was like, does she have on some kind of Crocs?
She totally
Those look more like little slip-on slippers or something.
Little dancer shoes.
Yeah.
Yeah, little dancer
shoes. There was something going on there, but I just kept thinking, man, y'all really didn't check the dailies on that because that was obvious. She was wearing different stuff. That was very odd. The robot, I love this trivia.
Box.
Roscoe Lee Brown, you may know him as voicing, doing the narration.
Roscoe Lee Brown.
He did the narration on what was it? The Star Wars LP thing?
Yes.
I had one on as a kid, but that's his voice. And was
the read-along, the read-along Star Wars gatefold final album. I remember that.
He has a great voice. Yeah. But anyway, he voiced and performed Box the Robot. They said that the unwieldy costume made it impossible for Brown to right himself if he fell over. My favorite thing.
That makes me laugh, seeing him on the ground, thinking about him trying to... Somebody come get me!
Yeah.
But the most disturbing thing about Box, you know, he looked very crappy from afar. But then when they did the close-ups, it was even more creepy because you could see Roscoe's mouth.
And underneath
the metal. The face.
And I'm like, I don't like that.
No.
That's supposed to be all robot. No human inside, please.
In fact, you could see it so much, I thought, are they trying to suggest that this is a cyborg or something? Or, like, what is this?
Yeah.
So, if anything, it made me think too hard.
Roscoe Lee Brown, also the voice of Kingpin back in the old 90s Spider-Man cartoon.
Oh, nice.
Right.
Did he affect a New York tough guy sort of boss, mob
probably
boss
did,
accent?
Probably did, yeah. Mm. Exactly.
Have to check that out.
Bring me Spider-Man's head.
Yeah. By the way, that ice cave, we haven't had a good vagina cave in a while, and I just wanted to point it out.
And that was full of them, too, boy. I'll tell you.
Yeah. Lots of that. But very Star Trek set in there, by the way, in all the ice space. It was just like
a lot of glitter in the stalactites, icicles. Yeah.
Sprayed blue to look colder than it is. And it's terrible. That stuff looked terrible. Also, Chick in the Bucket, I'm going to give two of them, the vagina lizard and Farrah Fawcett. Farrah Fawcett, just that was it. We were done. She's out.
Yeah, we didn't see her after she helps them in the with the gang, right? The dildo gang.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about who? You said Farrah Fawcett.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. She showed up at the end, right?
She did. I didn't see her.
Yeah, because you're right.
The one, when the girl at the end, the touching her face at the end was a different. That was the Playboy.
You're
chick.
Right. You're right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think she ever showed up again. So, whatever. I guess I don't need. Also, all the sanctuary people, like, there's a whole group of them in there in the dark going, now you need to make sure to do the thing so you can enter sanctuary. Yes. Like, where are they?
Put your
at?
Hands on your head.
Yeah, where are these little rascals, you know?
Yeah. Well, they obviously haven't figured out that all you need to do to get to sanctuary is just do a little bit of swimming and move a couple grates.
Yeah.
Really not too hard. It's not bad.
All these mentions of these little tiny subplots reminded me of a great trope in this movie.
Oh, hold on. Let me prep it for you.
I actually really like this. Murdered by your own torture device.
I really
enjoyed that. Like, I thought that whole, like, it's meaningless. It doesn't do anything to advance anything. But we're just going to go over here to the plastic surgery center, and we're going to give you a little narrower face. Oh, God, he's crazy.
Yeah.
And, like, as soon as that guy goes crazy, I'm like, oh, he's going to take a laser to his face. Yep. That's what's going to happen.
I loved their tech, though, the little face software they were using where we're just move it over like there was a top piece, a middle piece, and a bottom piece.
Yeah. Like, also the it cuts your face, but then it heals your face. By the way, all that blood that was coming out of your face, that disappears.
What was the point behind that? See, it doesn't hurt at all. Slice, unslice. Yeah. It's like, why would you do that to me?
I'm glad my dentist doesn't go into my mouth and say, all right, well, just to prove how well the Novocaine's working, I'm going to go.
Right.
See? Didn't feel it, did you?
Yeah.
See? Huh?
A new form of that. In a new movie, like that scene could be that could be some gory business. They could go crazy.
There was a James Bond movie that did that, and I'm trying to remember what it was.
The one where he strapped and the laser got real close to his crotch, and then he escaped.
No, no, no. That was the laser crutch and Dr. No. I expect you to die, Mr. Bond. Right. No, there was a different one that I couldn't remember.
Yeah, there's some lasery thing. That's got to be, what era, which Bond would it be?
I could have sworn it was Roger Moore.
Probably era. Roger Moore, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Interesting.
That's ringing a bell for me, too, but I can't think of which one it is. I noticed there's a, I saw Jaws, poor, what's his name?
Richard Kiel.
Richard Kiel, hugging on Roger Moore in a photo on Netflix, and it says, it's for The Spy Who Loved Me, but in the their thumbnail is those two just hugging. I'm like,
I know,
Spy Who Loved Me, oh. Anyway, hey, let's talk about the...
Die Another Day apparently has a laser face scene, like a laser. I'm trying to find more details about it, but it looks like it is...
I think that was the first Bond movie I saw. Wait, so Roger Moore was my...
What's Die Another Day?
Is that
the one with the diamond, the guy with the diamonds in his face, and I think it's when they're trying to...
That's a Pierce Brosnan deal then.
It is a Pierce Brosnan deal, yeah.
Yeah, that was I liked that one.
Oh, wait a minute.
The North Korean with the diamonds. The diamond.
That's the one with the ice house they're driving the car through, right?
Yeah, and the diamond face guy I thought was going to go on to be like this huge megastar. And maybe he did, and I just didn't notice because maybe he's just in Korean cinema or something. But that guy's cool, man.
Yeah. Oh, Jinx, that's right. That's the one with Jinx, Halle Berry.
Jinx Halle Berry.
Jeff Cleese was Q in that one. Judi Dench was M, of course. Rosamund Pike.
Oh, I like Rosamund Pike.
She was Miranda Frost.
Did she look very concerned the entire time? Because her face
She looked absolutely serious. There's no joking with...
That's fantastic.
Anyway.
Well, what we've learned about this movie is that utopian societies don't wear bras. That's great. We're into it. The turning back around thing, like the part in the story where he's like, we've got to go back and save the thing. I was screaming at my... screen like you don't go back. Are you kidding? You were one of the cops who would chase people down, shoot them with your green laser and kill them. You know what's going to happen if you go back. What are you just going to walk in and everyone will go back, hooray, we can now change our minds? It doesn't work that way. Like I was super annoyed with his decision to go back, and I was totally with her on complaining about it. And then you talk to your 90 or you're supposed to be playing older, but you talk to your 90 year old freaking geezer man who lives with cats to make that journey back. He's going to get killed. He's going to die.
Yeah. You guys almost died doing that. How dirty and tattered their clothes got in the space of half a day of walking through that stuff.
Right.
By the way, your clothes are all dirty. I get it. You're in the woods. Like there's waterfalls and stuff and you're going on the mudslide ride. That's great. But then you take off the clothes and you wash them. You're in a nice pond. Why didn't they wash their clothes?
Well, it's like they didn't know how or something.
Yeah. The thing that disturbed me, though, is something that disturbs me in films. I don't like scenes where people have to swim underwater inside structures. It always gives me anxiety because I'm like, first of all, they're diving into a place. They have no idea how deep it goes, and they keep pulling off crates and tubes and keep going. And I'm like, no, there's no way. I couldn't do it.
What did I see recently?
You don't know about any sort of like little air pockets where you can swim up to the top. Get a little
when will air be again?
Yeah. I saw something recently that you would have hated. What was it? It was something newish. Something newish. And I want to say Jason Statham or somebody was trying to do this very thing you're talking about. And there's only way to solve it is if he gets the thing open in time, which means he's almost out of breath by the... Ooh. I don't like that either.
Can't stand it.
Do either of you, hold your breath in scenes and movies where the characters swim?
Yeah. Oh, I don't know. Maybe
I don't know why I do that, but I do that.
I might do that. Did you do that last night or with the movie?
Yes. Yeah, watching it. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Until you passed out.
Then I woke up and the movie was over. When I came to.
Came to in the hospital and said, where am I? It was fantastic.
That's right.
All right. Should we do some clips? We have clips for this movie. I've got here.
Oh, one more thing I wanted to bring up.
Yeah.
I've been a big fan of the band Jellyfish for years, like since the 90s. Yeah. And Roger Joseph Manning Jr., who was a member of that band, when they broke up, he did something called the Moog Cookbook, where he did all these albums of covers of songs using a Moog synthesizer. This other thing that he did, and I need to get you guys a copy of it, is called Logan's Sanctuary. And it is not just a movie soundtrack for a movie that never got made, just an imaginary. There was never even talk of a movie called Logan Sanctuary, but he created the soundtrack for it. The booklet that comes with it even has stills from the movie that doesn't exist.
Oh, that's so cool.
It's like they go the whole nine yards to make you feel like this was a real thing that they did the soundtrack for.
Does it feel like parody to you, or does it feel like he's serious about his fandom?
Oh, no. Serious fans, sort of like it is right up the same channel as the soundtrack to this one, but it feels modernized and
wow.
It's great. It's really, really good.
All right. Color me interested. I remember that Moog cookbook thing being very good as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, someone's got to keep the Moog synths alive, man.
Somebody's got to do it. I'm glad he's doing it.
That's right. All right. Here's our first clip of the day. This is, I'll just ask the question. What time is it?
Enter the carousel. This is the time of renewal.
Oh, this is the time of renewal. Renew! All right.
Logan, you're renewed.
You're renewed.
You're renewed. Wow. All right, so here's the thing. The movie, purposely, Jerry Goldsmith, fantastic storied career, great, great composer. Star Trek stuff. He's a huge connection for our Star Trek connections. He made a very distinct decision here. He went all weird, synthy, horrible 70s sci-fi music while in the structure, and then outside of the structure, fully orchestrated. I actually think it was a good choice in retrospect. Mm-hmm. At the time I'm listening, I'm like, ugh, this stuff is so bad. But then I liked the difference it made, that the freedom felt like music freedom too. Do you know what I mean?
Right. Yes. Right. Yeah.
So here's some of the indoor stuff. I love it. Freaking love it.
Ow, my Casio.
Right.
It's good stuff. All right, here's a dumb scream. All right, I like that one.
Was that the guy getting after they chased him and tortured the poor guy, and he jumped
off the balcony.
Fell off the mall, upper level in the mall.
Right in front of the Claire's Boutique.
Yep. So he was hoping to make it to the Spencer's. Couldn't do it. All right.
Right.
Here's some ASMR for 70s sci-fi. Here you go.
Logan 5, approach and identify.
Oh, jeez.
You just said my name. You know who I am, now lady.
I'm going to eat a sandwich.
I'm the only one in the room.
Yeah, it's very ASMR.
Listen, as I eat this peach.
Oh, my gosh. It's mainstream now. You know, I got a Super Bowl commercial.
Totally, yeah.
Well,
this is an ad for beer.
I hate that so bad. I hate it. I'm thrilled for everybody who loves ASMR and it works for them because they have all these sources for it now. I think that's great. But, man, I can't deal with it. It's too hard for me. My ears shrink and like cave into my head. I can't do it. All right. Here's a word that everyone loves.
Onk.
Is that thing really called an onk?
Onk.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, it is.
Why is this new to me? I don't
Egyptian
know.
Egyptian symbol of life.
Okay. Yep. All right.
And boy, after this movie, they were all over people's necks in the 70s.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Onk.
So you never played the Raiders of the Lost Ark game on the Atari 2600?
Oh, no, sir,
yeah,
I did
that's
not.
That's right, he gets an onk.
I never did, no.
It's a major item in that game.
I didn't know that. Yeah, it's, to me, absolutely new. I knew it was Egyptian origin because I can just tell by looking at it. I've seen it on, you know, ancient Egyptian things before, but I never knew it had a name.
Let me hold it for a minute. Yeah, that's Egyptian.
But it definitely had that style, right? Like that look of...
Yeah.
You'd see that on some pharaoh's headdress or something. But anyway.
Yeah. Onk.
It's fun hearing her say it. Onk.
Onk.
Onk. Yeah. Onk. Onk. Here, pull my finger.
Onk.
All right, great. Onk. Here is some old terrible sci-fi intense sound. So this is when he realizes his hand light is blinking. His hand LED. Here you go.
You gotta love looking at his head going, you are gonna put this back,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
I'm
right.
gonna get my years back, right?
question.
Can I get this?
Do I get my 4 years back?
Yeah. I love, and she kept interrupting him. Boy, that computer's a real dick.
I answered your question, Logan 5.
Yeah, get the hell
no,
out
you
here.
Didn't
get into the carousel. All right, here's Francis. No, is this Francis? No. This is that kid they found, one of the Rugrats that are just running around.
Oh, Mary?
Was it Mary? No, Billy, I think. Here it is.
They said I'd never get him, but I cut him up good.
Wait, I missed it.
They said I'd never get him, but I cut him up good.
Oh, he cut him up good, and he's throwing his knife back and forth.
Yeah, that was actually
the Jets.
That was actually a throwback to it was actually to a throwback to a character they met earlier that had gotten cut up.
Yeah,
I can't help it. When you played that clip, I thought you were playing a clip from the Brady Bunch.
I can see that.
It's pretty unique to that era, I think. But it's so funny to hear Brian say he's like a Jet. It really was. They're all legs are spread out, throwing the knife back and forth. When you're a Jet, you're a Jet. I can totally see that. I'm genuinely curious about that remake that's coming. Who's doing that? It's Spielberg or somebody. Somebody's making a remake of West Side Story? Yeah. Like full musical and everything. Yeah. Let me see real quick. West Side Story remake is being made by... Rita Moreno's in it doing something. It is Spielberg. Spielberg's making this.
Nice.
It's soon too. Like,
and it's not live to TV thing. Huh? It's not one of those.
No, it's got Ansel Elgort in it, who played.
Ansel Elgort is the guy who should play young Harrison Ford in everything.
I agree. Mm. He's in Insurgent, Divergent, Baby Driver, and The Fault in Our Stars.
Mm. Right.
And now West Side Story. When you're a Jet. All
right. Oh, no. I'm guessing something is somebody different. But Ansel Elgort was a Baby Driver, right?
Oh, yeah. I'm thinking of the other guy, too, that you sent the video for.
Yes.
Yeah. Here's a big best scream we've had on the show in a long time. Here you go. It's pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She really let it rip.
I felt bad for her. Logan's all like, it's going to be okay. Everything's great. No problem. Enjoy your life. Later. Mm-hmm. 2 seconds later, Francis.
Logan, by the way, I found out should have been dead 3 years previous because the actor was 33 at the time.
Michael York?
Right.
Yeah. He's 77 now. Man, time flies.
Oh, Austin.
I got to watch that again because now I gotta watch that again. All right, here's Farrah Fawcett doing her business.
Hello, Sandman. We don't get many Sandman. I think we've only had one other since I've been here.
Well, a Sandman can get as sick of his face as anyone else.
Doc, there's a Sandman here. Can you see him?
Sandman?
I'm a person and my name is Logan.
Right? Say Sandman one more time.
Just say it one more time. Okay,
While she's saying all that, Michael York is back there taking his shirt off.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you need to bend down and pick up that pen I just dropped on the floor.
Mm-hmm. Are you wearing a nipple shirt? All right, here we go. Here's a clip.
Dark hair.
I just thought that was weird. So I captured it.
Dark hair.
Logan number 5, no disassembled.
Here's the, nice. I don't know why that's so funny to me.
I don't think you would do dark hair with lasers. I think you'd just do it with like some Grecian formula.
Yeah. Or just color your hair. It's not a big deal. All right, here's, this is from earlier in the show when I played it in the intro, but I'll play it again.
No Sandman ever ran.
I love the rhyming. It's great.
Yeah.
No Sandman ever ran. Hiding, what?
Hiding? Yes.
Oh, it's Box.
Yeah, Box.
Yeah, that's Box.
Hiding?
Box, yes. Box had too much emotion for a robot. That made me feel weird.
I mean, that's the point, right? He's supposed to be haywire as hell and kind of creepy, but also weirdly innocent and thinks it's doing the right thing. And again, in the right hands, you could remake that and that dude would be a lot better than he is. Just give him legs, have him be super friendly, chappy looking, but then he turns on you.
Chappy.
Make him all chappy, you know? Or that robot, what's his name? Viewfinder, Pathfinder, the robot in that new Apex Legends game.
Oh, yeah.
He's very chappy, that guy.
He is.
All right, here's, what's this? I don't know. Something about it being all here.
Fish and plankton and sea greens and protein from the sea. It's all here.
Mmm. That sounds all right.
And he protein actually, from the prior sea.
To, prior to being in the ice cave, he worked in the Houston Zoo, telling you, you know, the narration during the film of.
Yeah.
I'm going to start ending all of my. I'm going to start ending all of my sentences with "and protein from the sea."
Yeah, I want to too.
And plankton. And somebody's going to do a great mashup too.
What would you like?
And plankton. And protein from.
What would you like to order, sir? A Big Mac and fries and plankton from the sea. It's so sing-songy. It's great.
It totally is. Yeah.
All right, your mom, Brian. I just emailed her yesterday. I said, "Look, I need one more clip." From his teenager years when Brian Ibbett was a teenager. Can you please send those? She says, well, I've got this really awkward one that I recorded while he was in the car with his prom date. And I can't really explain maybe what was happening visually here, but here's the audio from that encounter. Here you go.
What is it?
I don't know. Whatever it is, it's warm.
Yeah.
It's warm.
How many times does one of them ask the other, what's going on? What are we looking at? What is this? And they just say, I don't know.
I don't know. Do
just get over it. I don't know, and I don't care.
This is new to me, too. We were in the same place.
Yeah. Right. That was not that was not a valid reaction when they first saw a cat for the first time. No. That's not how you react when you see a cat for the very first time.
No, you'd lose your crap.
They both went, oh,
right.
I would have seen it and said, what is this devilry, and run the other way. Plus there are like 10 of them there or something like that. All right. She hates the outside.
I hate outside. I hate it.
Jessica.
I hate
Jessica.
It.
Jessica.
All right. Calm down.
And I don't know what happened to that lizard.
Oh, and that was super tropey. Man, this is actually one of my favorite tropes. Oh. And you never see it anymore. But it was in so many of movies this time and earlier. And that is when a woman goes hysterical and you just have to hug her. You just put your arms around her and you sort of wrestle her back into some sort of sanity.
Yep.
Like you swaddle her.
Yeah, you
swaddle her.
You man-valium her. You man-valium it. That's what you do. Right. You get in there. You hug him. It's like a heavy blanket for a dog on fireworks night. You just gotta calm those hysterical women down. All right.
The 70s.
Who are you? I wrote.
Oh, you.
Well, that's the way he said it.
What are you doing?
Yeah.
He channeled some Jim Backus at one point too.
Mm-hmm. A little bit. And this was almost your prom clip, but anyway, enjoy this one.
Can I touch them?
Oh my.
It was almost that.
Oh, yeah.
That would have worked just fine too. Yeah.
What did she want to touch? It was his wrinkles, or she called them cracks.
Yes. Yeah. Cracks in your face. Yeah, they hurt.
Could I touch your crack?
I did not care for the old man touching. That kind of disturbed me.
You know what though? This was a nice opposite of age discrimination kind of message. And I kind of like that. Like none of them ever get over 30, and so they don't know.
Yeah,
they've never
so they
seen anybody
the old age.
Yeah, so they saw the movie was happy to promote the idea that we can grow old and we can do it together and that's a meaningful thing. Like there's I'm a middle-aged guy. That's starting to sound good. So I liked the message. Usually it's the opposite in movies. It's just anti-age no matter what.
Yeah. I mean, have you seen Soylent Green? Mm-hmm. I mean, come on.
Yeah. It's people. All right. Here's a thing. Oh, I wrote, what is he saying? Because we have a little chance here to have some guessing. Okay. So I have no idea what he says. Here it is.
McCavity. There's no one like McCavity. There never was a cat with such deceitfulness and suavity.
I don't know what he said.
Yeah, that's from a poem, right?
Is it
T.S. Eliot?
Yeah, T.S. Eliot.
But what was the
McCavity?
This part here.
It's the last word.
Yeah.
Scrabity or something. Scrabity. Here, I'll play one more time.
McCavity.
What?
Scrabity.
Wabity. That's what he's saying. Wabity, because it was baby talk, right?
Oh, okay.
So it's a huge poem. It's a huge poem.
Right,
but I think the word in the poem is depravity.
No.
That would make the most sense.
Oh, the last stanza is McCavity, there's no one like McCavity. There never was a catch of such deceitfulness and suavity, like suave.
Oh, suavity, okay.
Oh.
Well, that seems like a terrible word to try to rhyme, you know?
Yes, agreed.
Suavity?
That's what's fun about it.
Holy shit, why was he so popular? All right.
Fucking every human lie breaks the law of gravity.
There you go.
Powerful levitation. I'm looking at now.
Yeah.
Doing it in his voice, I like it. Who are you?
Oh, yeah.
All right, great. Here is the final thing, and this is him really freaking out, and I enjoyed it.
There is no sanctuary.
And it's not even slowed down him saying there is no sanctuary. No. It's Michael York having to stand in front of a microphone going, there is no
You sounded slower. I got a little bring me those detonators out of your voice.
Kind of, yeah, a little bit of that. And there are four lights.
All right. There are five Logans. All right, let's do this. Let's do a this. Nope, that's, is that it? Yeah, that's it. This is the Film Sack Checklist. The Island is better than this? Probably. Exit Sandman. Get it? Instead of Enter Sandman's Exit.
Enter Sandman, Exit Sandman.
Yeah,
sure.
Check. And then finally, Logan's underjunk as he swam away. Oh, check. I saw his ween. He peeled off the other direction, and they kind of lifted up a bit, and I saw his wiener. So there's that. What else? Trek connections. We got a bunch, but some are more significant than others. There's a bunch of Matt artists and stuff like that who did a bunch of work like that. But Jerry Goldsmith is the big one. He did the music. He wrote the musical score for 5 Star Trek movies and the main title themes for 2 Star Trek series, which would have been TNG, and I believe DS9 was also his. And then he died not that long after that. I think I have that right. Also, George Clayton Johnson, who co-wrote the novel Logan's Run. In TOS, he wrote the episode The Man Trap.
Oh. And, The Man Trap.
Finally, as a double, we got Gary Morgan. He played Billy. In TNG, he played stunt double for Tracy Walter, playing the Ferengi in the episode The Last Outpost on The Next Generation.
Speaking of stunt actors in this film, there is a pretty protracted sequence. It was not as short as I actually thought it was going to be, where they're escaping from Box's lair, and what's his name? The guy pursuing them shoots out a wall, and they almost drown from a bunch of rushing water.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The stunt actors and the leads, there were several shots of their faces, are at great risk. It was a terrifying thing to imagine being in that room with this rushing water pushing you around. Mm-hmm. It was one of those things. I'm like, I know I haven't seen this movie because I will never forget this sequence.
Yeah, it's. I made a GIF out of that because I found it hilarious that his dumb little pea shooter would create such mayhem. But you're right. The way they fall over each other. I mean, the fact that everyone's ankle wasn't broken. I don't know why. It was nuts.
Yeah, those. Now, those guns were just one of those matters of convenience. What does the gun do here? Well, apparently it blows stuff up.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
That sounds
And they
right.
could only hit the floor.
It only hit the floor. But I couldn't figure out if Logan was just messing with the guy because he was taking great pleasure in torture. Right.
Yeah.
You know what I've also done? I've conflated. I know what I've conflated a lot of is Logan's Run with that Number 9 show. What was it called? Number 9.
Oh, The Prisoner.
The Prisoner. I have those two things mixed up.
The White Album?
Is that Number 9. Yeah. Number 9.
Yes, the Beatles White Album. Nailed it. All right. Soundtrack grade. We're going to give it a... Oh, thanks to Daryl, by the way, for those... I don't give him enough credit for that, but he has this awesome software thing that tells him what Trek connections happen in films, and we appreciate it. Each and every week. Soundtrack grading, we give it a BOTO, B-O-T-O, for Better on the Outside.
I like it.
Oh, yeah, that's real good.
That's good.
Yeah, it's not great on the inside. It's kind of terrible. All right, let's get to the Twitter post. This is where you guys sum it up in 280 characters or less. Let's begin with Randy Jordan.
Logan's Run, rated PG, but full of nudity and sex and scantily clad people who get in fights and get their lingerie dirty and then take their clothes off and then put them back on and then take them off and then put them back on, just like a Saturday Night at Epitaph.
Yes!
It continues.
Nice.
I was ready for it that time. I almost said it with you.
Oh, nice. I was still unawares. That worked out really well. By the way, where did they find those coats? They found those big, giant animal coats down there.
Boxes,
those were
displayed.
Box provided them for you.
Yeah, Box provides them. That's how he gets you naked. He's like, oh, you're wet. Here, put on some warm clothes.
Before he ran the cave, Box actually ran a coat check at the Houston Zoo.
Oh, that's nice. Boy, it must have been hard. You just stand there. He's so immobile. It's a terrible design. Anyway.
It really is, yeah.
Well, his name is Box. What did you expect with his mobility?
Right. You don't think agile when you hear the word Box. Right.
Can't believe they named him Box. Is he named that in the book? Probably. I'll read
it.
Yeah,
that was my point. Why not change that name?
Yeah,
you could have come up with anything better.
Brian Dunaway, it's your turn.
Oh, Logan's Run. Question. Do I get my 2 hours back? So that's a no, you giant Simon Says. And protein from the sea.
Giant Simon Says as an insult is really good. You yeah, giant that, Simon if Says. You,
Yeah, the, they had like the colored spots at the on the ceiling. I was like, is
right,
that like
with, a the, giant with the Simon squares says? Around them would go.
Yeah.
Yeah. The things, this, the future of Siri and Alexa and everybody.
Cancel.
I just told my thing to go off.
Cancel.
Finally, Brian Hibbett.
Logan's Run. I'm the best at what I do. And what I do is done in a pastel serape fashioned with a belt.
Oh, and it looks good on you. Oh, look at this. Just handed to me. Right here. The sheet of paper has the almost titles. These were almost, this movie was almost called titles. The following things, yeah. First one was Settle Down, Francis. They didn't go with that, though. Yeah, But finally, Logan's Brisk Walk.
Yeah.
Because it didn't seem like he was running that much. But whatever.
No, they weren't doing much running.
Just kind of walking around.
Very, very beginning. When he first realizes he's running, there's some running.
There's a little run. Yeah. It is technically Logan's Run at that point. Mm-hmm. Let's do a quick email. This is from Rob Lowry, wrote in. The subject line was Watchmen. This is our last episode. He wants to say the following. I am nearly left speechless by Randy's take on the Watchmen. I know it's not secret or anything, but the guy never even watched the movie. This is an amazingly beautiful film. What the heck is he talking about? I'm continually baffled by Randy. It's just as, oh no, sorry. It's as if he takes everything that is critically praised or generally appreciated and insists on taking the opposite point because he cannot appreciate why it was so good in the first place. I don't understand. It's fine. I still love the show. Keep doing what you guys have been doing and have a great day. Rob,
why would he think that Randy didn't watch the film?
I don't know. I'm confused. No,
but before,
by it.
Like, I think his point was that Randy had not seen the movie before right?
Well, there's a lot. Okay. We all have a movie we haven't seen before. That happens
we have
all the
tons
time.
Of them. Yeah, tons sure. of them. But
more to your point.
I mean,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I don't want to argue with somebody who clearly likes something. I'm just saying, like, 64% on Rotten Tomatoes, it leaves some room to be desired. Like, you can understand that people, you know. We're going to see that it's not actually critically praised and got nominated for no real movie awards and go, I can skip that one.
The movie has some device. It's a divisive film. There's no question about it. There are people who really like it. I think like Dunaway and I, there are people who have diminishing returns like Ibbett, who's, you know, over time has gotten less enamored with it. And then you have Randy who's got fresh eyes for it and can see the problems. Like this is just one of those movies. It's going to be hard to please everyone.
I think, and it's funny because if the Rotten Tomatoes score is 64%, I'd say the four of us liked it about 64%.
Yeah, that's
probably about right.
On average, yeah.
We're a reflection.
Yeah, yes. We're a reflection of the overpaid critical mass.
Yeah, I think you can't obviously do this experiment, but I think if we went back to last week and we're like, all right, let's give it some grades, it would have been like 2 sixes, a 7, and a 7.5.
Yeah,
something.
I'd
like,
give it a 7.
You know what I mean?
Half.
Like,
I like it.
Like I don't know. I again don't want to argue with you. Glad you love the movie. But there's a lot of things out there like that. Like I had a lot of trepidation about the Lord of the Rings films. I knew I was gonna see them, but I kind of wanted not to because I love the books so much.
Right.
And it's also something I've read many, many times over the years. And like Watchmen is more. I read it twice. You know, I read it when I was a kid, and then in college or something. And so like I have these really strong feelings about that story and I want to keep them and I don't want a movie to necessarily ruin them. And it didn't, it was a perfectly good film, but I think it was as good as say 300, which also has problems.
Yeah. 300 has,
issues. You're not and you're not necessarily now see like me, I'm Zack Snyder speaks to me in his storytelling.
I think you say in my sleep. Okay, go ahead. Continue.
In my sleep. He's like, Brian, you love Sucker Punch.
Sucker Punch is really good.
But yeah, I think, you know, I think Randy, that's not your cup of tea, right? You're not a big Zack Snyder.
But I also,
style.
I didn't crap on that movie. Like
you didn't.
I felt very much like we were all kind of came into the same space where we were like, well, here's the problems, but you know, I could watch it again. I would absolutely watch it again.
I'm not going to criticize Randy for not liking strawberry, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, strawberry the flavor, it's not for everybody. The flavor is in general or the fruit itself. you think?
That too.
Okay.
But the ice cream. Specifically, I'm talking about. Yeah, specifically, I'm talking about ice cream. Like, if you want to get to really know somebody, invite everybody over and get some Neapolitan.
You know when there's then you'll know who your real friends are.
Right.
Yeah, you're actually onto something. Like the non-chocolate, non-vanilla flavors of ice cream kind of end up breaking people down into tribes, and it's they're not bad. You know, like strawberry ice cream is not bad, but I'm sure there's people who are like, it's a 6 out of 10 for me.
Yeah, no, I love a good strawberry ice cream, but you know what I don't like is a strawberry. Not a fan. Like I like really? It. I like its use as a flavor in all kinds of other products. Excuse me, but a strawberry, fresh or otherwise, dipped in chocolate, yeah, doesn't matter. Can't. I just am never in the mood for a strawberry. Don't know why.
I feel like it's one of the most inconvenient things with that damn stem, that it's not like an easy thing to pull off of it. You got to like either cut it or bite or whatever.
Yeah. Dig your thumb in there and get the strawberry under.
Yeah, then you get a big mess. It's like, you know, all right, bite it and then throw like the top half of it away.
Yeah, it's weird. It's a weird fruit. Besides, it's like, you know what it is? It's the Jim Goodbody of fruits. It's got the seeds on the outside.
Jim Goodbody.
Right. Yeah, it's true.
Another thing about weird. Watchmen the movie is it's long, and there's like some diminishing possibilities on length, where as you find out, that movie's 2 hours 40 minutes, this one's 2 hours 55 minutes, you're less likely to watch it once you've already not watched it. Like, it's really hard to go watch something for the first time when you've got to set aside 3 hours of your life.
Like Braveheart, I missed it when it came out. And for years, I could not convince myself, because every time I saw that runtime, I was like, that is a whole Saturday afternoon, Brian.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a lot. I agree. That movie's awesome. But if you're asking me right now to prioritize my time, I'm like, I don't know if I can do it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean,
give us a good hour and a half movie next time.
Yeah. I'd do it for this. Mm-hmm. I'd do it for this show if it came to it. But you know what I mean? Like, just if I'm looking for a movie to burn through, running time matters. It just does.
Yeah, I could have used less nudity in this Logan's Run, because the 2 hour runtime was kind of long.
Yeah, and I thought it was shorter because of the TV version we all saw growing up, cut down by half an hour or something. So who knows? Well, I appreciate the email there, Rob. And if you want to send your emails in like Rob, you go to the website and just use the contact link like he did, or you can email us directly, filmsack@gmail.com. Our next movie is, I don't know,
Kurt Russell, James Spader in a Roland Emmerich joint called Stargate.
Oh my gosh, yes. Stargate.
2 hours and 45 minutes long. No, I'm kidding. Yeah. I would love for it to be,
but I think it's only 1 hour 45. And I love this movie.
We're going to have some fights then, because the first 20 minutes, brilliant. The last half of that movie, terrible. And we'll get into it, because I love the show, SG-1. I loved Atlantis. Right. I like all the Stargate spinoff. And I love it as a concept, but I really struggle with the last half of that movie.
I have a place in my heart for it, because it introduced the Stargate universe to me. Mm-hmm. And so I probably forgive it for many sins.
Yeah, it's been a while for me. I think I haven't seen it in full. I've seen bits of it since, but not in full since I saw it in theaters in 94. So I was in Vegas. I don't know if that'll have anything to do with it, because I was with some people I didn't like, but I thought that first 20, 30 minutes of that movie are amazing and were leading us to some incredible adventure. And then it went to poop after that. So we'll talk about that. That'll be next week right here on FilmSack. That's on Netflix. So that's where you can view it currently. Again, that is Stargate, the film, with that that guy in it that has the taped back wiener in that movie that was popular. What was that movie? What's the one I'm thinking of?
Silence of the Lambs.
No,
Ace Ventura.
No, he finds out.
There's too many movies that have tucked penises. It's too many.
It's Crying Game, because at the end of that thing, Irish actor that I love, I can't think of his name suddenly.
Stephen Rea?
No, older guy. Some Usual Suspects.
Gabriel Byrne
is at the end of that movie, and they're getting it on and making out, and then they're getting to a point, and they're like, oh my gosh, you've got a wiener, and then it
boiling.
Yeah, then the whole thing goes
boiling.
Yeah.
And protein from the sea.
It really is a good topper for everything you're gonna say. So that's next week. Stargate, be here. We'll be here for you. Filmsack.com. In the meantime, that's the website with everything you'll need So if you're looking for a link, an old show, whatever, it's all there. I'm going to start at some point putting a secondary feed in place so that this main feed stops being so huge. I realize it's been nice for 9-10 years to have every episode we've ever done in one file. But it's just becoming untenable and almost a megabyte and a half per every time anyone pings it, it gets real crazy real quick. So, I'm just letting you know, we'll make sure the archive's always there, but you're probably going to get it like 200 episodes in this, and then the other 200 will be in like an archive feed, which you can easily subscribe to if you're looking for the old stuff. We do it at TMS. We'll do it here. So there you go. Filmsack.com is the website. I already said that. Oh, on Twitter, we're at Filmsack. Leave us a review wherever you get your stuff, be it iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, wherever, because that helps us a lot. Helps us get noticed, helps us get new listeners each and every day. That's going to do it for us, for me, for Brian, and for Randy.
Thank you,
Rick. We'll see you next time.
Punk. Punk.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network.
Frog Pants Network.
Get more shows like this at frogpants.com.
Ankh.